Blog Talk Radio.
On another subject, I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about the origins of choke and, you know, the notion of what Victor actually ends up doing and how, you know, I guess, had you seen someone who had done that or the idea of faking choking, you know, and as a part of a con game?
The summer of 1999 was such a suck summer. Fight Club was supposed to be released early in the summer, but then I think it was the Columbine shootings happened, so they bumped the release date to October. And I was getting to be this media darling, and I was in the yard one day with the telephone doing all these phone interviews, and Time Magazine was supposed to call at 3 o'clock. The publicist said, Time Magazine is going to call. Make sure that you're free at 3. So I had the phone right there, and the phone rang, and it was the publicist, and she said, this might be a joke, but a police detective just called from Latah, Idaho, and they found a dead body, and they think it might be your father. So here's a phone number in Idaho. You need to call them back. And I called them back, and the next day I went up and identified my father's dead body. But it was such a strange, horrible juxtaposition of promoting the movie and having to do all of these very high-energy things, juxtaposed with going and getting my father's dental records and meeting with the medical examiner and looking at this very badly burned body to identify it. And the disconnect between the two, you know, very happy thing, very horrible thing. And one night I was driving back from one of these long trips to Idaho, and I was still dressed up. I was wearing a jacket and a tie. And I thought, I just can't take it. I am so exhausted. I so don't want to go on with my life. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pull over to the side of the road. There's not much traffic. And before another car comes, I'm going to walk a few steps up. I'm going to lie face down in the gravel with my headlights on me. And someone's going to come along and they're going to call the police and say somebody's collapsed on the road. And eventually I'm going to lay there in the dirt until somebody with a badge and a gun comes and puts two fingers against the side of my neck and then very gently says, sir, are you okay? Sir, can you hear me? Can you tell me your name? Sir? And very gently kind of rolls me over and says, it's okay. It's all going to be okay. I so wanted that. I wanted somebody with authority to come and just touch me and say, it's going to be okay. And I did it. I pulled over. I walked ahead. I lay down in the dirt in my best clothes, and I waited. And I waited, and nobody came along. And as I'm laying in the dirt, I thought, what about a guy who just pretends to choke in restaurants? So that somebody embraces him and seemingly saves his life, and he can have that breakdown in their arms while they're saying, you're going to be okay. Everything's all right. You're going to be okay. And eventually, I got up, I dusted myself off, I got back in the car and drove home, and I started writing Choke. But in a way, I come from a family where people really don't know how to express either their affection or their need for affection. So many of my books are people trying to fool each other into expressing affection or, you know, expressing it in very indirect ways. So that's kind of par for the course. The guy going to the support groups to get hugged in Fight Club, the guy faking choking and choke, just all of these ways of fooling people into meeting your emotional needs.
Hello and welcome to In Our Craft or Sullen Art with Richard Weissman and Newton Baum. This week Richard has some former commitments, so it is Newton Baum speaking, a bit different today. This is part of the Late Night Poets group on allpoetry.com. We're glad that you can join us today. We have Pam on the line who will be helping co-hosting today. How are you doing, Pam?
I am doing great. Looking forward to hanging out with you, maybe some other cool poets, and of course, delving into the poetry. And how are you doing?
Yeah, great. I was very lucky to find that introduction after not too much searching. What did you think of it?
I liked it, but then again, I find him really fascinating. Like I had mentioned to you the other night in message on All Poetry is that I had been listening to watching some of his interviews on YouTube, and he's absolutely fascinating. I really like his sense of humor because it's dark and twisted, and I think oftentimes when you go through a difficult life and tragic times in your life, and a family, as he mentioned, that's not good at expressing emotions, you develop that sense of humor, you develop that creativity. I found it so interesting when he was talking about how he came up with the idea for Choke, because he realized that in that moment, he needed someone of authority to say it's okay. And, you can't help but, even though it's a horribly sad story that he lost his father, that his father was murdered, you can't help but, at least me, I can't help but chuckle a little bit at the idea of somebody, just laying there waiting, I've always been fascinated I haven't read a lot of his work, but the little bit I have read and watching interviews of him, I find him extremely fascinating, like a very straightforward and yet at the same time sardonic in his approach to doing interviews. There was this one interview I watched where he had already mentioned his father being murdered, and the interviewer asked him, has anything tragic ever happened in your life? And he responded in a very straight face, you mean besides my father being murdered? And, but yeah, I thought that was a great choice for an intro. Very cool.
Thanks, Pam. Now, I think we have another caller on the line. I'll just bring them on now. Area code 470. Who am I speaking with?
It is me, Fallon.
Hi,
Fallon.
I'm glad you could join us.
Hey, guys.
Excellent. And, Fallon, I'll just ask you, did you get a chance to listen to the introduction?
Unfortunately, I didn't. I was writing a piece right quick to some of your little prompts, so I'm sorry, I missed it.
Excellent. We're very happy about that. I'll just make a quick note. I agree with you wholeheartedly, Pam. Sardonic is the word for it, and he's so well-spoken in the interviews that I've seen. Some authors are somewhat of a recluse, but he seems to be at one with the press. As he mentioned, he was a bit of a media darling as well, and I just he just has this poise and grace. And just on the note of his writing process, I just thought that was such a clever segue from lying on the road waiting for that figure of authority to tell him he was okay to create Choke. And like you, I haven't read a lot of Chuck's work, but I have seen Fight Club, and it remains one of my favorite movies to this day. I always mention it to Richard when he's doing the prompts. I've got a very good audible list of books I need to catch up on, and I'll be adding a few more after this show, I dare say. So, yeah. Now, Felon, well, just to check. Yeah?
Oh, I was going to tell you real quick a funny story, quick story. Phil, Jean had seen your contest you put up and that you had added my name to it, and she thought that I had come up with the idea to do Chuck Palahniuk, or however you pronounce his name, and told you that's what I wanted to do, because just the day before that, on a show, I had said to her, Fight Club, absolutely one of my favorite movies.
How funny is that?
And so when you picked the author of Fight Club, she automatically thought I was connected.
That's because your name is a snake, Pam.
That's awesome. How? But you know what the funny thing is? That happened when you did Hunter S. Thompson, because legit, I mentioned it to Richard, and then like a day later, your contest was up, and I'm like, oh, thankfully I checked. So we seem to have a similar interest, I dare say, in writers. All right. Well, Felon, I'll just quickly check. Are you right to stay for a bit, or do you need to do a read and run? Or
I can be here for just a little bit until my medicine kicks in. So.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get you up second. We'll get Babbler up first,
okay.
And then we'll get you up second. Awesome.
Okay.
All right. Sounds like a good plan. So are we ready to get the ball rolling?
We are indeed.
All right. Well, in that case, I am going to put up Whittling by Babbler and Neutron. Will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure will. Okay, so it's Whittling by Babbler. I itch to sample everything, fly down the black top going a three-digit number, cook that dish on page 54 of the Martha Stewart Living Cookbook, jack up a house and pour a new foundation, rattle my bones to the deep bass vibrations of a bucking jackhammer in the center of a highway that needs ripping out. There are 24 hours in a day, every day, no more and no less. Of those 24 hours, society dictates that I spend 8 of them sleeping, 8 of them working, and at least half of the remaining 8 preparing for the other 2. 4 measly hours to make the rest of it worth it. The remainder of a shitty math problem. I've given society little fuck yous, middle fingers sculpted in the shape of a call out, and all nighter, throwing back little white pills to shave a few more hours off the side, so I can snorkel off the Cayman Islands, unravel the mysteries of the perfect dumpling with an 80-year-old grandmother and secret connoisseur of Chinese traditional pan frying, peer through a viewfinder and mark the perfect frame for a film I've been dreaming of way longer than my allotted daily time. If I could get a few more hours, even just one, how much more of life could I slice into my wrinkles, master a few more languages, smell a dozen more cracked bindings from the recesses of an old alcove, or would I waste them behind the desk from which I sit now, stealing time? Another hour pissed away on man-made problems like bills and mortgages and deadlines. There is only one real deadline, only so many hours. End poem. And Felon, what did you think?
I am standing on my tippy toes, clapping, 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 going bravo, bravo. Just her metaphors in this, right on my bones, the deep bass vibrations of bucking jackhammer in the center of a highway that needs ripped out. That path that you're on in life, you just don't want to be on that path anymore. You don't want to take that road. You just want to just rip it out and lay new foundations or lay new pavement. It's probably not as hot, and it's more soothing and something more surreal to who you are. And just the way that she breaks the hours down and says, you know, this is a shitty math problem. And it is. It's a shitty math problem that we live in. This piece here is just amazing. is always babbling, knows how to put things, and she's a great storyteller, or just a way of putting how life sometimes can be just absolutely shitty. Just amazing. Just amazing, right, Babbler? Great job.
Yeah, I have to agree. That was a prolific couplet there at the end as well. There was only one real deadline, only so many hours. And I thought it was a good way to start the Chuck Palahniuk show. My favorite part was, if I could get a few more hours, even just one, how much more of life could I slice into my wrinkles? I think Babbler captured that sense of time, that it's drifting through the hourglass with relativity, sometimes fast and sometimes slow. And there almost seems to be some nihilism to this, right? What would we do with our time, the 4 hours to make it worth it? And squandered or not, we do not know how much time we have left, so we best embrace it. This poem really inspired me. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I have to agree that it's very inspiring. You know, I thought it was a perfect choice to be the first poem read on the show. I really like how Babbler's natural style does a really great job of reflecting tonight's prompts and the author for tonight. The language is intelligent, and yet, you know, you're not tripping too much. You're not tripping over any words because it's, you know, straightforward language. I like how, like as you mentioned, it's about time and money and all the needs that we have. And that's what a lot of his writing reflects, is the ideas he was talking about in the intro, you know, how we have needs and how do we get them met. And, you know, I thought there was an edginess to this write. It was hard-edged. It had a sense of desperation to want to get more hours out of it, not only to do the big things like snorkeling in Cayman, but, you know, to learn how to make the perfect dumpling. You know, all those little things that we never have time for. You know, just so really a strong write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Felon and Pam. And I think we're going to get Felon's poem up next when you're ready, Pam.
Absolutely. Up next we have Rich Within by Felon, and go for it, Felon.
And that's going to be hard to follow, but okay. I went off your prompt one. It's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything. And it's called Rich Within. Seven wonders of the world stand or exist as life's reminders. Battles lost sit empty amongst an ancient coliseum. Wealth buried to no one's fortune within a sealed pyramids. Lush greenery off cliffs only the blessed can see. Walls so great offer no existence. Arms stretched in holiness to a Christ some don't even acknowledge. Marble tomb made for one, though shallowed to millions. Wonders are when life gives you dirt. Tomorrow offers in another day to see what yesterday, end point.
Excellent read, Felon. I'm going to start the comments off on this one. I was drawn particularly to this section here. Wonders are when life gives you dirt. Tomorrow offers another day to seize what was lost yesterday. And I was talking with a friend yesterday. I used to be in the corporate world, and it ended abruptly when I ended up in the psych ward one too many times. And I was really struggling with the transition as to what to do next. And I think this poem reminds me of that, really, like that wonders are when life gives you dirt, because you have to come up with your next move and just to keep always trekking and pushing through. And then you've got this section here, arms stretched in the holiness to a cry some don't acknowledge, marbled tomb made for one, though shallow to millions. And I just think you've riffed with the prompt really well, that you mentioned, it's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything. Very well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, as always, I'm really impressed with how quickly Felon can whip something up. and to, for it to be so spot on to the prompt. My first thoughts I have were that it was, you know, a powerful and emotive write on finding the blessings in the dirt and the strength in your, and I really liked this all the way through. But I particularly like wealth buried to no one's fortune within sealed pyramids, lush greenery off cliffs, only the blessed can see, walls so great offer and no resistance. I like that for me you speak that the all the riches in the world that are buried, the gold, the silver, you know, everything that you're buried with means nothing because you cannot take it to heaven with you or, you know, you, wherever you go, you can't take it with you. And the wonder of life is living for today. You know, just, I thought this was beautifully written. It was powerful and very impressive brevity. So well done there, Felon.
Thank you. I mean, just like the seven wonders of the world, just because they exist doesn't mean they're everybody's wonders of the world, because wonders of the world can be just the next breath we take or that person that we have accompanying us in life. You know, just because people say these are the seven wonders of the world doesn't mean that they are. Just like the Taj Mahal, there it is, made for one woman to just lie in wait, the ruler's wife, and yet no one else entombed in that. So it's like, how is it a wonder of the world when it's only one person enjoying it, and the others just have to just sit by and look? So seven wonders of the world is just a vision that you have to live at your own wonders. So that was my reason for the poem.
I like it. Very cool.
Thank you. Glad you enjoyed it.
And where are we off to next, Pam?
All right. Up next, we have The Cobbler by Richard Wiseman, and we have a recording for that. So whenever you're ready, Neutron.
Excellent. I'll bring that up now.
The Cobbler by Richard Wiseman. Relentless talk. Talk, talk, Abiyama's human skin drum draws taut, ever inching me towards blinding dusk. These gold, coin-laden pockets now just weigh me down, down to ocean's floor. Muted now, impotent waves crash above as I gulp, spit, choke. Imaginary mind shards cut deep green veins till I bleed out, broken, laid flat along that silent, sandy bottom, lost in my murky Atlantean tomb until dim yellow ray of divine mother call, I rise to surface. Again, holy wind fills these sails. And so I remain a cobbler, ever mending tattered souls like mine. End of poem.
Excellent read from our illustrious leader, Richard, who can't be with us today. Now, this was actually written to two prompts. No matter how careful you are, there's going to be the sense you miss something, the collapsed feeling under your skin that you didn't experience at all. There's that fallen heart feeling that you rush right through the moments where you should have been paying attention. Well, get used to that feeling. That's how your whole life will feel someday. This is all practice. And also from prompt 7, if death meant just leaving the stage long enough to change costume and come back as a new character, would you slow down or would you speed up? Now, I like the fact that this is almost structured like a three-part play, with the arc at the end coming to the realization that money, the gold that weighs his pockets, will not relinquish his fear of missing out. And so he continues as the cobbler, ever mending tattered souls like mine. I really enjoy the depiction in the following lines. As I gulp, spit, choke, imaginary mind shards cut deep green veins till I bleed out broken, laid flat along that silent, sandy bottom lost in a murky Atlantean tomb. I thought it was a very clever piece. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, definitely extremely clever. I thought it was as always, intelligent. I like how he references Yama, deity of death, and the idea of the gold coin-lined laden pocket makes me think of the idea of somebody who is going to buy their way into heaven. I also like how well this does work for those quotes, and also for the whole idea of the main idea of the book, Choke, is the idea of somebody who wants to die, who wants to escape it all. And as you had mentioned, near the end is the idea of they're coming back to life, being called back to life. And a lot of times Richard seems to have great wordplay in this, his poetry. And in this case, you know, it really stands out at the end. And so I remain a cobbler, ever mending tattered souls like mine, and souls spelled S-O-L-E-S, like the bottom of shoes. And yet, you just automatically think also of the other word soul, meaning, you know, the spirit, the human spirit, like the whole idea of if I can keep living, maybe there's other people of humanity that I can reach out to. So really a thought-provoking write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. And Selena, what did you think?
I think that this is a very intellect right, because for me, Yama's, what I get off the Yama's is also, it can mean twin, the twin of himself, you know, the relentless of the talk of the Yama's human skin drum. You know, that's the inner line of us. There's always two sides of us, you know, some see and some that don't. It draws taunt every inch of me towards blinding death, you know, there's the good and the bad. And then there's the one where we have our riches of how we live life, or what, but it weighs us down because we're too focused on what we have to do to make those goals. But yet we evidently fall to the bottom of the ocean, or we drown in our own days and our own riches, or what we see as wealth or status quo or whatever. Does that gulp, spit, and choke imaginary mind shards, cut deep green veins? This just means that, you know, envy is, we envy what others have, or we envy that we can't be happy and free as others. We're just in that same old in the life and the scheme and what we think society thinks we should be, but actually seen as the great. So this is just an amazing, amazing rite. And yet the yellow ray of divine mother calls, and that's the next day, the lighting that's brought to us, you know, and then we sail again. Sometimes you don't have to have these weighted down pockets just to be wealthy. You know, just live life for yourself and don't drown in the days of nothing that show nothing when you go to heaven or wherever we're going. So this is just amazing, intelligent, right?
Excellent comment, Ellen. Really well done. And I'm glad to hear your voice again. It's been a while since we've been on the shows together, so just want to point that out.
I'm glad to be back too. Unfortunately, I have surgery again next Friday, and it's going to take me out for a while, but I'll be back. Just know I'm not giving up, and I'm fighting.
Excellent. That's what I love to hear. Your fighting spirit, as always. And Pam, what have we got up next?
All right. Up next, we have Napoleon in Egypt, Part 1 by Anton Ansford, 37. And it goes like this. A man, neither short nor tall, treads the darkened streets, finds a darkened hole in the wall, a muffled imam to greet. The committee have broken. I must know what awaits me, and you go to Egypt, you will surely die, perpetrated by the news, he makes up his mind. Live or die, I will go to Egypt and perhaps find a tool there to revenge myself upon those who wish me harm. He arrives at the barracks, finds his chief of staff, scarred and battered. Are my sheep and dogs prepared? In the morning, I will scour the universities, libraries, and academies for willing scientists and artists, candidates for a vast, expensive enterprise, which will nevertheless be the making of France, while I do that, kindly check the provisions and equipment we sail on Friday. For all the modern mystery of the antique land, it was tenfold in those times, all its truths buried under harsh, dry sand, leaving only ancient hatred from Israel and Rome, its sacred script misunderstood as an occult recipe book for converting lead into gold. The first morning he looked at the wide sea, confide his fears to Boucher. The chief of staff laughed at first. Of course you will die, but he didn't say when. Nevertheless, Napoleon had seen his own death and is very afraid. As the ship nears Alexandria, he has a dream. The huge stone creature, human-headed and lion-bodied, opens its cracked lips to say, "Eat me, and you will live forever." Some weeks later, out riding alone, he finds some artillerymen firing at a monstrous man-headed lion. His head throbbed. He heard the words, "Sleep in the pyramid, and you will find the answer." End poem.
Thank you, Pam. Excellent read there. And Anton wrote this poem. This is a carryover from last fortnight's episode, and it was written to a Yeats prompt, W.B. Yeats. I think the storytelling is quite adept. The author note just mentions that it's the sailing to Byzantium prompt, and it's quite a long poem showing how Napoleon's experience in Egypt changed for the worse. To put it most simply, Anakin becomes Darth Vader. And it was interesting from what I've recently read of Yeats, there is parallelism with his work in that his early works too, my knowledge, were focused on occultism and spiritualism. He produced many poems based on Irish legends, Irish folklore, and Irish ballads and songs. So well done. And Felon, what were your thoughts?
I was amazed by this poem. I really like how he started it off. A man neither short nor tall treads the darkened street, finds a darkened hold in the wall, and muffled him he greets. You know, Napoleon was very short. I like how you said that. No man nor man, it's short nor tall, treads the darkened street. That, you know, it doesn't matter how big and little you are. If you're coming to find something, you're coming to seek something, or, you know, it's your destiny. And that was his destiny, to either live or die. I will go to Egypt, perhaps find a tool there to revenge myself upon those who wish me harm. He's like, I will find greatness, or I will find the tool that's going to keep me alive and show them how strong I am. This is a very powerful write, and just very intelligent, and just it's got a lot of great things in here. Enjoyed it a great deal.
Excellent comment, Felon. And now, Pam, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful storytelling poem. You know, for some reason, I do seem to remember reading before about Napoleon being into occult-like stuff, but if not him specifically, I know that, you know, there have been throughout history leaders who have very much depended on having, say, like a type of a witch or a fortune teller, somebody around who could help them be in contact with interpreting their dreams and interpreting, you know, like predicting the future. You know, so I found that part of the whole storyline in itself fascinating, and the whole look at a leader of a country who has that time of desperation to, you know, to win battles and to, you know, by any means possible, get the answers that he wants. So wonderful look at the whole idea of an obsession with death, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And where are we off to next?
All right. Up next, we have our one other carryover, and that is Hyper Civil War by Keith Palethorpe. And Felon, will you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. And this is by Keith Palethorpe, and it's Hyper Civil War. When you muck through a storm, keep your head well down and don't be displayed in the light. At the end of the road, there's another fight and the deep purple laugh of the clown. Mock on, mock on. With hurt in your heart, and you'll never muck alone. You'll never mark alone. End point.
Excellent read there, Felon. I actually really enjoyed this brevity and where he took the prompt. And any ridicule aimed at the ills of war in my eyes is good. I think it looks at as if Carmel will take the man down, but I question who's next will be standing in the ranks to continue the war crimes against the Ukrainians. So sometimes it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this was definitely an excellent brevity. You know, I really do like how he says mock on, mock on. Like it feels like a mockery of rock on, rock on. And I really like how you read this, Felon, especially the neighbor, you know, exactly as it, I felt it was supposed to be read. The deep purple laugh of the clown, you know, that's just a great line to put in the middle of this poem and the whole idea of, you know, as, you know, the whole idea of just mocking those who, you know, like, I feel like, yeah, you know, I guess for me it's kind of that idea of, you know, having a sense of humor through the difficult times, but also how mocking like leaders like who don't know what they're doing. You know, it's really a wonderful kind of social commentary and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. And Felon, as the reader, I'm going to give you final words.
Thank you. I really enjoyed this a great deal because I think this brevity is just a hard-hitting write. And I, too, Pam, I agree this is just like the mock on is like, yeah, bring it, buddy. Because, you know, Putin thought he was just all this, and his laugh is a deep purple. That's what I'm thinking. And the deep purple laugh of the clown, that's the bruised laugh because he's, you know, he's now soon finding out that what his things that he has done is coming back on him. There's repercussions for your every action, and that the suffrage is not going to just be Ukraine. The mocking is going to be on him. Mock on, mock on. Your neighbor mock alone, which means, buddy, you might be mocking on this, but you're going to be the one. You're going to be the last laugh in the end, and we're too not alone. So I think this is a powerful write, and I hope and pray that ends over there in Ukraine pretty soon, and that maybe they get a handle on it and take this dude out. So powerful write.
Excellent comment, Felon. And Pam, where are we off to next?
Let's see here. Up next, that is a good question. I don't know if I grabbed the next one. Give me just a I will do that. All right, here we go. All right. Up next, we have Life or What by Weaver of Dreams. And we have a SoundCloud for that, so whenever you're ready.
Excellent. I'll bring that up now.
My body screams, each muscle racked and twisted. I feel as though liquid silver is pouring into my veins and solidifying as I beg for release. If this is life or all I have left of it, why linger here? Every second I breathe in agony, then my chest barely moves as I breathe out despair. Trapped in this body that has failed me, my one thought is, what next? I might come back to learn another lesson, or atone for some wrong I did. I have to consider, however, if arriving back would be as painful as leaving is. I'm afraid it would be. So my choice is between a rock and a hard place. Even so, I choose to leave.
Excellent, SoundCloud. And Phelan, I will get you to comment first this time.
Wow, this kind of hit me hard. Is this, if this is life, or have I left it? Why linger here every second I breathe in agony, then another in agony, then my chest barely moves as I breathe out despair. Yeah, I definitely know that feeling all too well. And I really can't really say much. I don't normally get speechless, but this is kind of like speechless. It's kind of hitting home for me right now. So, Dreamweaver, wow, another right that just knocks me out of my shoes. Great job.
Thank you, Phelan, for your candidness. I think for me, old age is a fear, and quality of life is an even greater fear. And to some extent, the only way to triumph over one's fear is to face it or embrace it. This poem was actually written to the prompt, a girl calls and asks, does it hurt very much to die? Well, sweetheart, I tell her, yes, but it hurts a lot more to keep living. And I think this poem is quite visceral, and it's like a punch to the guts, particularly the imagery of the liquid silver pouring through veins. Over here in Australia, voluntary euthanasia is a contentious issue at the moment, and reading this drives home the lack of dignity surrounding end of life. And, you know, I just look at it this way. We would put down an animal in pain, but we do not afford people the same opportunity to be deterministic in ending their own suffering. It was a very tough and thought-provoking rite. And, Pam, what were your thoughts?
I think she said she'd be right back. Oh, she's there. There she is. I'm sorry.
I got back, but I had read this one earlier, so I am able to comment on it. You know, to me, it was poignant. It was hard-hitting. It was emotive. You know, I think anybody who has suffered physically from any ailment that, you know, controls their body or even controls their mind, you know, can relate to this rite. I thought it was really a powerful rite on wanting to get rid of a body that you feel has betrayed you, that, you know, wanting to have the, like, it feels like the only, like, it feels like the mindset of someone who feels like the only control they now have over their life, over their body, is when it, to end it. You know, and so it just really, I mean, I read this earlier today, and it is just one of those that you just stop and you take a breath and you're like, wow, that hurts emotionally. And which is what makes it beautiful. So very well done.
And Pam, did you want me to post the next one, or are you
nope,
right to keep?
I can.
Awesome.
I absolutely can do that. And all right. And here we go. Up next, we have Originality by Matt29 and Neutron. Go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Thanks, Pam. So it's Originality, and it was written to the prompt, nothing of me is original. I am the combined effort of everyone I've ever known, from Chuck Palahniuk, Invisible Monsters. And it goes like this. In life, we are like clay, ready to form from our influences. At birth, we strive to reach understanding of our world, soaking up everything we are told by teachers, parents, and family, never doubting or challenging any of it, even when we don't understand. In school, we are educated further about life and understanding others. No matter how much we begin to encounter conflict and ridicule, we still strive on making and breaking friends and encountering love. Our emotions go through a roller coaster and we become adults. This leads to us struggling to cope with life's demands, often being pressured by peers in gambling or drinking, feeling emotions we are unprepared for in anger, suffering, and pain, getting married and then possibly starting a family and career. Our lives then take on new meaning as others depend on us. Still, we are molded by others around us in work and friendship. Our views are often called into question and we are left shell-shocked, not really understanding where these views and perceptions were derived. All our lives, we are in some way or another taking on different ideas from our parents as we grow or from our friends and colleagues. The stories or films they see and then recommend to us again change our thinking towards how we view things. In reality, we are everyone who has ever walked in our shadows. End poem. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
I really like the philosophical approach to this one. I like how it takes us through the step-by-step, the different, paths that life takes from childhood to adulthood and how people touch us in various ways. And I like how it takes a look at the idea that those experiences, those interactions with other people are what make us who we are. I really like, especially in school, we are educated further about life and understanding others. No matter how much we begin to encounter conflict and ridicule, we still strive at making and breaking friends and encountering love. Our emotions go through a roller coaster and we become adults. And then our lives then take on new meaning as others depend on us. You know, that whole idea of, you become a parent, like you have a baby, or you become an aunt or an uncle, or even if you become a caretaker of an elderly parent, there gets that point where there are people you realize who depend on you, and that really does change your perspective. So I thought this was a wonderful write by Matt29 and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. And Fallon, what were your thoughts?
I really think he took the prompt and he just molded it to what it needed to be, because it's almost like we're like a snake slithering through life and we shed that. Every time we shed a little bit of what we are because it's on perceptions of others and we don't get to keep what's intact of what we think we should be. We're just lying and crawling on the bellies of what we want to be. We're too cowardly to stand up and say, no, this is who I am. This is my views. This is my beliefs. And yet we just keep shedding and shedding and shedding. So we're finally, we're really lost in the shadows of others, and we're not standing in the forefront of who we are. So I think this is a very intelligent write. I think it's just how life is, steps in life, how we are molded into who we become as adults, and how our views can be changed just on perceptions of others and not for what we actually see or what we think. So I think it's an amazing write.
Excellent comment, Fallon. And now we have another caller. Area code 423, is that Rex?
Yeah.
Hey, Rex.
Hey, Rex.
Well, what's cooking?
Rex there.
And did you get a chance to listen to that poem, Rex?
Yes.
What were your
this
thoughts?
This hits me up with that old adage, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. But it's actually the opposite. It's in our youth when we sit there and tell everybody we know everything the world has to offer where we stop learning. And it is not until we actually get out into the real world and we experience that we actually start relearning.
Ooh.
Excellent comment, Rex. And glad to have you with us. And yeah, it's a long time no speak. I need to start calling into more shows and I get to be with my peeps. more, but I just think I have to agree with you, all of you, on this poem. The take on the prompt was really well done. It was philosophical, and I think it was accessible and relatable also. You know, we move through life taught to reach milestones, taught to think how to think and what to think, and we're introduced to the world through the lens of those in our shadows, etchings in clay. I love the way that Matt crafted this poem with the metaphors and dancing between emotion and show, don't tell. Very well done. And Pam, where are we off to next?
All right. That is a good question. Let's see here. Up next, we have The Lament of an Altruistic Mind by Mermaid. And it goes like this. The dew settles replete. I do not discriminate. Each drop has a need which seeds deeply into this altruism. The plum ripens too quickly. A lemon aches for sweetness. An apple is bitten, crunched, crushed, and grapes pop when under feet. My hues reflect like crescents of suffering, busily calming, embalming their hurt and pain, embracing a kiss of off palm. A heart trips on strange beats, a breath drags, heaving, tentatively, seeking a touch or hug, huddled embrace that only I can afford. End poem.
Excellent read there, Pam, and offering from Mermaid. And Rex, I'll get you to comment first.
Oh, I guess I will start with that second stanza. The plum ripens too quickly, lemon aches for sweetness, and apple is bitten, crushed, and grapes pop when under feet. That is quite the analogy to humanity. Not everyone is apples to apples, oranges to oranges. You get your bittersweet notes of lemon because that's all they have to offer up the world. The thought of the apple is bitten kind of hits on that note of the tree of knowledge and the payment due. Grapes pop when under feet also because you've got a variety of grapes and colored issues. So there is a notation to all of humanity in that, from the white grapes to the heavily rich black grapes to the rich red ones to the lighter ones. So it encompasses all of humanity in its tone. And so does the next one. My hues reflect like crescents of suffering, busily calming, embalming their hurt and pain, embracing a kissed off palm. A kissed off palm has that note of indifference which walks in it. And the idea of she took that quote to "I want to be needed." So there's that a full offering of what comes from the heart. This kind of also offers up that note to what Christ was offering. Turn the other cheek, so to speak. I can offer up everything under the sun to you, but you must be at first be willing to accept it.
Excellent comment there. And Fenlon, what were your thoughts?
I really like this because the way it starts off, you know, the dew settles replete, I do not discriminate. Basically, she's given everything that she is, that she doesn't matter. All she's willing to do is to plant the seed in the one that meant for her. And then just like, you know, Rex states, you know, the plum ripens too quickly, the lemon aches for sweetness, and so on. To me, I get from that is the plums that ripen too quickly is the prune, the things that are just prune, you know, prudish about life, and then the lemons that ache for sweetness life sometimes can be somewhat bitter, and you just need that sweetness, and then to the apple that is bitten and crushed and crunched, and it's the apple of someone's eye, but yet it's just crushed, and it's not really admired or being given what it is, and then the grapes that pop under the feet, when you become intoxicated by somebody and you're just beneath their feet and you're not anything more than just a sip or an intoxicant at that time. And it just goes on and on. I think that it really captures the prompt very well, and just the heart trips on strange beats, you know, you know, we get caught up in just the strangest things, and it doesn't matter that it's rhythm, that it's a regular thing. It's the irregular or something that's like, huh, I think I can change that. I think I can bring life back to it. Sometimes you just got to let things die and let it go and just know you can't breathe life into some things because it sure ain't breathing it back into you. Excellent, right?
And an excellent comment, too. And Pam, as the reader, I'm going to give you final word.
All right. Well, I really like what both Rex and Felon had to say. I thought this was beautiful all the way through. My main thought I got on it was the idea of the desire to share and give to others. The middle of the second stanza made me think of the fruits of the Spirit, and so it gives me that idea of reaching out to others in charity and love and kindness. I really like my cues reflect like crescents of suffering busily calming and embalming their hurt and pain. And what that speaks to me of is the idea of somebody who has been through a lot of suffering in their life and so therefore understands when other people are going through it themselves. So I thought this was definitely a beautiful write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. And where are we off to next?
All right. Up next, we have Open Cage by Julie Buck. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
All right. Let's see. Ah, there it is. Open Cage by Julie Buck. When I lost everyone dear to me, when I messed up everything that mattered, my open cage left me alone and suddenly free to do or say or to be anything. I was scattered, not liberated. I had that exact same freedom before losing it all. Now, ain't that a power kick to my undescended left ball?
That caught me by surprise.
I didn't mean it literally.
Oh. I'm going to get Phil to go first because I know she's going to head off quite shortly. So, Phil, when you're ready.
Oh, my gosh. Julie Buck is one of my faves. I mean, this chick here, I mean, we spoke, you know, off the website before, and she's even funnier in real life. I mean, she is just so full of wisdom, but yet so full of the wisdom that, you know, that life just kicks us in the gut, but in this one, it kicked us in our left ball. You know? I mean, it's kind of sad, though. It says, my cage was left open and alone and suddenly free to do or say or to be anything. I was scattered, not liberated. It's the fact that when all freedom was left there, she still was not liberated because what she wanted is gone. And that her liberation was in what she had before. And even though the things that she, what was that? She is, I had that exact same freedom before losing it all. She was still in the same position because she still was not herself, or she was not having everything, but she had something. So this is sad, but it's also very sarcastic in a way where she ends it. Now, ain't that a power kick to the understanding of all? I love it, Julie Buck. You rock my world. It's just amazing.
Excellent comment there, fellas. I'm laughing that the one that that Rex read is anatomically correct. I think for brevity, it touches on a lot of things, and it resembles and resonates my life experiences personally. You know, you may feel trapped by your burdens, and you may not take chances for the aforementioned reasons, but this part here, I had that exact same freedom before losing it all. Now, ain't that a power kick to my undescended left ball? It is a gritty write, and it conveys so much with the compactness and conciseness of the brevity format. So well done. An excellent read there, Rex. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I did think Rex did an excellent read of that. I did like the hard-hitting humor in the end line, but I also like that there is this serious message here of the whole idea that sometimes we look back and realize that we've burnt like too many bridges, that there's too many people, you know, like, you know, it very much reminds me of the idea of alcoholism or addiction, and how, you know, finally people have enough and they can't help you anymore. And it's like, you know, just walk away from you, and you realize that what you thought was freedom was not. And I really liked this all the way through. But especially my open cage left me alone and suddenly free to do or say or be anything. I am scattered, not liberated. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Rex, I'll give you final words.
Well, that last line was funny, first representation, and it does offer up a sarcastic note, as Phil said, but I like it for the metaphor. It's the disconnection between the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain, the analytical as to the emotional, because that whole first half is nothing but pure emotion. Like Dan said, burning of bridges, that's emotional. And then the thoughts being scattered, not liberated, is that analytical angle coming in, realizing what that next line says. I had that exact same freedom before losing it all. So it's a matter of perception with oneself and letting emotional viewpoints take over, rather than looking at the situation and what is going on and why are you running on pure emotion instead of actually thinking your way through it.
Great comment, Rex. And what's up next, Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Elegy to a Former Habit by Neutron Bomb. And, of course, Neutron, give that a read for us, please.
Thank you. So goes number one. My lungs burn with emblazoned emphysema, a nod to soft packets of cigarettes. I wait to cough up a blood clot, an allergy to a former habit that shrouded my walking cadaver with an urge to seek death at such a slow pace that none take notice, siphoning camphor and menthol like gas from a petrol tank to burn the air traversing down my esophagus, suppressing the alveoli. A rattling cough echoed about confined spaces, spraying the walls with phlegm. Two, like still water left to accumulate, bacteria, which floats in a crumpled plastic ecosystem that is no longer half full. We bleed one drop at a time until the anaerobic microcosms suffocate. We are walking petri dishes, our faces cloaked in cotton masks, mouths grimace or grin. The crevices of our hooded lids serve as the sole amalgam of a smile. End poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Neutron. Very cool, very cool. And Rex, your thoughts?
The biting note in that first one comes with that which we do to ourselves as a matter of course. Now, the second angle also rubs our faces in that same notation, because you hit us. We are walking petri dishes on faces cloaked in cotton masks, unrealizing the fact that within that touch of nastiness that we're forced to wear, or for those that took it up, there is a notation to what lurks beneath, and that is death. The thought with emphysema is a slow burn. What you get with consistently wearing those types of masks is something worse. That even back in 1920, doctors understood that we probably killed more people by wearing masks than the flu actually did back then, which said a lot to how we fell back into a realm of believing those who knew better but didn't bother telling us to begin with.
And we have a new caller, area code 706. You are just about to be on the air. There we go. Hello?
Hey, how's it going? How are y'all?
Who was I speaking with?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Who is speaking?
This is Dan Ellison. How's everybody doing tonight?
Hi, Dan. Glad you could call in.
Yeah, I was too, actually. I think it's a great subject. Great prompt.
Yes. Yeah, I was glad you were inspired. Very cool. And, yeah, Rex, I really like what you had to say about, you know, the idea of, you know, the things that we do to ourselves. So really great observations there. And Dan, did you get a chance to read Elegy to a Former Habit by Neutron Baum or to listen to her read it?
I caught the tail end. I was able to pull it up. And I got to say, it made me cringe in places, which I'm sure was the intent. It was really well written. But I can't seem to pull it up now. I've lost it. I'm sorry. Message board somehow.
Okay, so then... Did you wrote for the contest for memory. Did you need to read and run, or are you right to hang around for a bit?
Called to hang out for the rest of the show. I'm sorry I didn't get in earlier.
Excellent. No, that's fine.
Cool.
We're well and truly happy with that. And Pam, where are we off to next?
Well, first you're going to get to hear my comment, and then we'll go to the next one. Oh, way that yeah, nice try there, though. Now, it's funny to me how you and Richard both use the word soul in your poems. That's just a cool little tidbit there. But, you know, I think this is extremely relatable to anybody who has any sort of habit or addiction like smoking that they're trying to overcome. And even as your body is starting the healing process, it's also fighting itself. I thought there was a really like raw honesty to this, very visceral, burn the air traversing down my esophagus, suppressing the alveoli, a rattle and cough echoed about, confined spaces spraying the walls with phlegm. And we are walking petri dishes, our faces cloaked in cotton masks, mouths grimace or grin the crevices of our hooded lids. And if you just, I mean, if you think about how much bacteria and germs are within the human body and that the idea that any moment, any part of us could be festering, you know, especially as your body is, you know, going through that healing process, it's almost like there's a war zone going on. So just really powerful use of language. It's both artistic and scientific and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And sorry for cutting you off. I wasn't sure if that was your comment to start off with, whether you just kept it short and sweet. So when you're ready, we will soldier on.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah, a lot of times I do a quick, short, and sweet comment just not to have that awkward silence, and then I go on to somebody. But, yeah.
Awesome.
And up next, I have my poem, which is Tar-Filled Cracks and Tissue Paper, and it goes like this. I wish I had a fireplace so that I could watch the flames dance the soulful movements of the imprisoned upon a Shakespeare of oak logs. With fire, you're always aware of how much you need it and how much you want it. I want to be fire to someone, a glowing red-tipped poker shifting their embers. I want to take the stage and burn it down. I want to be that thorn in the side, making it difficult to catch a breath. I want to know there is more to emotions than tar-filled cracks and tissue paper. I want love to be more than a free-range Ebola humping a bum leg. I'm waiting for the day I lose it all in the dog days of summer when grease and potato skins stick to the grill. I feel like there's no purpose in me now but to linger on the sharp edge of reality. I wish I was a bed of coals melting the bottom of feet, walking aimlessly, until there was no choice but to float in the air like coked up angels carving putrid hieroglyphs in stoned tablets and poem.
Oh, man, Pam, this was one of my favorites tonight. I have to say, truly a work of art. The imagery was gritty and visceral, just like Love a Bit. And there was some real meat on these bones for me to gnaw at. And I'm impressed with the way you built this poem up with the repetition. But by far, those two last stanzas were my favorite. I wish I was a bed of coals melting the bottom of feet, walking aimlessly until there was no choice but to float in the air like coked up angels carving putrid hieroglyphs in stone tablets. I think this poem really resonated with me personally, being on the dating apps and just wanting a reason to delete the darn things. And I think it will resonate with readers and listeners alike. Very well done. And Dan, what were your thoughts?
Which poetry prompt did you write to? Because I think I know. Is it the one about being? Do you remember?
That I had written to 6, 7, 9, and who knows, maybe a couple more.
Well, I mean, the one that really kind of sticks with me is the, and I can't remember the exact quote, but it has something to do with the need to be needed, the need to be wanted. That, and I get a little bit of that from here too. But like, there's, and you definitely pulled from, how do you pronounce his name? Is it Paulnick? But you definitely pulled from his style.
I'm not sure. How do you pronounce the author's name, Neutron?
I actually had to look this up, and it's Palahniuk, I think. That's as close
Palahniuk
as I could get to it, because no one ever says it in their interviews. So I had to do a pronunciation check.
But I really like this here where it's, I'm waiting on the day I lose it all in the dog days of summer when grease and potato skins stick to the grill. Just that imagery there, you know, because that's what's always left behind, you know, every time you're grilling out. And it's just like, it comes with it, you know. I want to know there is more to emotions than tar-filled cracks and tissue paper. That's where I kind of get that desire to be wanted, that desire to be needed, you know. And fire is consuming, and I really like how you – it's the metaphor that you keep tying everything back to, and it's – I personally enjoyed it. I think I actually commented on this one earlier.
You did, yes.
But that's cheating. No, but I really enjoyed this. I really did.
Excellent comment, Dan. And Rex, what were your thoughts?
I like what Dan just said, but there's also a muted tone of destruction that walks in this poem. Let me see, what was it? I'm waiting for the day I lose it all in the dog days of summer. There's kind of that note to going postal. And it did remind me of, because you hit on, I want to take the stage down, stage and burn it down. I thought of burning down the house. And another one, fire, I want you to burn. So You walk, there's a double edge here. It fits on the fact of wanting and needing, but it also kind of hits on that thought of I wish I was a bed of coals melting the bottom of feet, walking aimlessly. There's a critical mass of a little bit of, I'm going to burn them all. It, don't care who they are.
Thank you, Rex. Thank you very much.
And where are we off to next? Dear Pam.
All right. Up next, we have your poem, Rex. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
All right. Black lights and a derringer's wispy aerosols. Cracked levers hooking us along where bay jingling come promises in star-spangled tread, cherries aglow in emerald pocket sills. Unfaithful doxies know what yens burn in a blacklight fantasy funland. Those firebrand rituals marking the solstice of flushed derma in brandy wine reflection seething in chambered promiscuity, shooting a pearl grip derringer's whiskey aerosol. Liquefying vanilla lies with blackberry rains, bitter sweet toxins, bled paradoxical fields, eyeing marmalade, diphtheria, plentitudinous aromatics, gong farming and arses, verbal flatulence, and oral diarrhea. Bon appetit, mes amis. For one must remember, shite is still shite in stained-lipped palindromes, where empty bellies are full of hunger. End poem.
Excellent read there, Rex. Look, I just think that after the end was a touch of brilliance. I won't read it again because it was the last stanza. But you call a spade in this gritty, somewhat philosophical rite with your own brand of wit. Just as a side note, it's rare that you can pick up someone's style without reading the author, but you shine through and through with all of your rites. And as Richard would say, great riffing with the prompt, which was, just for the record, the weather today is calm and sunny, but the air is full of bullshit. Very well done. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Awesome. Oh, I really liked this one. You know, I think I'm going to put this on my poems I think are awesome list because it is awesome. You know, the thing is, like you were mentioning of how, you know, somebody like Rex really caught the author's style. And he has, but one of the things I really like about Rex's poetry and admire about him is he can capture an author's style and still remain true to himself. Like he has this very almost elegant and intelligent way of telling people that they're full of bullshit, which, you know, I just really like. I like the mention of unfaithful doxies know what yens burn in a black light fantasy fun land. It kind of makes me think of the whole idea of the playground for the rich, you know, that the idea of those islands that the rich go to indulge. And I shouldn't say all rich people, obviously, but, you know, they're those islands of prostitution and drugs and whatever is the next thing. You know, I really like the humor in the ending with bon appetit, mes amis. For one must remember, shite is still shite. You know, it doesn't matter where it comes from. It doesn't matter where the lies come from. They can come from somebody wearing a white robe with gold trim, and they're still lies. I also really particularly like the imagery in liquefying vanilla lies with black raspberry rains, bittersweet toxins, bled cross paradoxical fields, eyeing marmalade, diphtheria. Visceral and poetic at the same time, and a really strong look at a social commentary of, you know, higher-ups that are getting what they want through the lies that they spoon feed. So excellent right here, Rex, and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you.
Excellent comment, Pam. And Dan, I'll give you final word on this poem.
Okay. I have a feeling that if Rex were to, like, you know, really dress me down, curse me out, I probably wouldn't even realize. Because, I mean, I mean, even the title here, Black Lights and Derringer's Wispy Aerosols, that sounds so pretty, you know, but at the same time, what he's talking about is not pretty at all. But the language that you choose here, I mean, marvelized, I can't even pronounce that word, diphtheria, and aromatic. I mean, and of course, that the very end there definitely got the same kind of sarcastic style that the author likes to throw out. And you say that you're not familiar with this author's work?
No, I've never read.
Really? Yeah, this is pretty close to what he does. This is kind of that same in your face, but it's a little subtle, but it makes you stop and circle back around to it and think, exactly what did he say here? And then when you realize, you're like, oh, wow. That ending is just awesome. I mean, bon appetit, again, I think that's, to me, that really hit. And empty bellies are full of hunger. It's like we just, no matter how much you keep shoveling us, we'll keep taking it, is kind of what I got from that. But I have to admit, I kind of I still can't pull up the chat menu. So, like, I got to your poem a little late, so I was kind of listening and trying to scroll at the same time. But I really enjoyed it, I can tell you that. And you read it really well, too. Good job.
Great comment, Dan. Thank you, Dan.
Excellent comment, Dan. And, Pam, where were you off to next?
All right, Dan, I have your poem up, Two Pals Next Summers. And go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. I met Dory on summer break. She was down staying with her cousin. We hit it off like puberty and acne, the type of story that's dime a dozen. She was my first true love, the first fix for a drug-abusing junkie. Her dopamine and oxytocin cocktails turned me into her lovesick flunky. But it was love of sort and real as you hearing these lines. But summer ended cold turkey, and she left me strung out to dry. She promised to keep in touch. She swore to return summer soon. But at 15, a year is an eternity, we wrote letters. Hers were perfumed. Dear Dan, tell me more, tell me more. How is your mom? Dear Dory, tell me more. Did you go to your prom? Oh, well, oh, well, oh, well. I don't know how else to read that. I'm sorry. Flash forward through social awkwardness, cut scene through my own prom disaster, gloss over the personal humiliations. Ah, here's footage we're after. The summer and dummy Dory returned. We had the same love scenes all right. Our scripts weren't exactly the same. Clearly, there had been rewrites. For one thing, she dated another, when in fact, they did go to the prom. But 2 months back, he was in a car crash like some sappy 50s song. I'm sorry, I'm reading a different version because I can't pull it up. Won't wake up from dream man swerve. How do you compete with a coma? How do you quantify that guilt? How do you stay smooth while making moves as he lays in a hospital and wilts? That painful, brief, sweet summer, he and I took turns at third wheels. They say if you love someone, set them free, but often that old bastard time steals. End poem.
Excellent read there, Dan, and right. And I just have to say, I did actually think that when I was reading it the first time before the show that it was a reference to Greece. And I'm so glad you caught up. No, not at all. I'm actually quite impressed that you did the performative value as well. And
I don't know how to read it.
You know what? It all comes with time, and you did pretty bloody well, I reckon. Like, I was drawn to this section here. She was my first true love, the first fix for a drug-abusing junkie. Her dopamine and oxytocin cocktails turned me into a lovesick flunky. And I just think you've depicted that young love, that with intensity of a drug-fueled haze. And your knack for storytelling shines through. So, and I'm just, as I said, very glad that you called and did it justice, because sometimes when you're reading, you don't know whether you're picking up on the right notes. But I just think it was authentic and heartfelt with a hint of the gritty style synonymous with Chuck Palahniuk. And then you finish with that arc in Indeed, How Does One Compete and Align Their Morals with One's Pants? I thought it was a great write.
Oh, thank you.
And no worries. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
I enjoyed this. I was so glad that Dan was inspired to write and inspired to that you called in, Dan. I like how very similar to the author, you have that dark sense of humor. Like, there's this bittersweet sadness to this, because it's that idea of that first love, that things don't go as planned. And I love that you threw in the the reference to Greece, and I really enjoyed. I was smiling when you were trying to sing it. And I thought that was awesome, because, you know, a lot of people would have just read through it, but I think singing through it really added to that humor in the right and I can't think of the right word, but I really enjoyed this all the way through, and how it was a great reflection of the kind of topics that Chuck Palahniuk would tackle himself. And there's this raw reality to the whole ending, with the idea of how do you compete with a coma. It reminds me of a book I read. I can't even remember the author or the name of the book, but it's it's always stuck with me because the basic storyline is there's these high school sweethearts and the guy gets, put not in a coma, but paralyzed and like full body, like quadriplegic. And his girlfriend, the whole book is basically about her life and her decision to, you know, end the relationship and go on with her life. This touches on those kind of painful topics. And it is an important question. How do you compete with a coma? How do you quantify that guilt? And so you can really just feel the emotional impact of that. The other thing I have to say to you is, and this might sound slightly odd, but this is just my opinion, is I find that when a lot of people write poetry that are true stories, as you stated that this is, you know, a true story, they depend too much on the impact of it being a true story to, you know, worry about poetic devices like, you know, the flow, the presentation of the way the stanzas are lined up, you know, the use of, you know, like, you know, gentle alliteration or what, you know, whatever the stuff that you have in here. And so while you're impacted by the fact that it's a true story, you don't always see it as being poetic, whereas I think what you've done here is you've balanced it out. There is definitely, for me anyways, a strong impact in it being a true story, but I can look at this and say, this is poetic in the way that it is written. So I thought this was very well done.
Excellent comment there, Pam, and agreed. And Rex, I'll give you final word.
All right, the bite in this is the fact that it comes across truthfully and honestly in such a way that teenagers with their first go-around could actually understand and see the reality that walks within it. I mean, you offer up that note, the third line, the first stanza. We hit it off like puberty and acne, the type of story that's a dime a dozen. Well, that's loaded with truth. My first true love, being like a drug abusing junkie, dopamine and oxytocin cocktails turn me into a lovesick flunky. Again, that puppy love angle. And then the thought of, but summer ended cold turkey. Now that also feeds into the junkie angle, but it also feeds into the fact that all of a sudden, oh shit, it's all gone. And then you rolled into that hot summer night song from Greece, which works as a perfect note to transition. And then you hit the slight transition with the flash forward through the social awkwardness, and then you offer up, here's the footage after. It's almost like they announced the coming on to offer up this little tidbit past the song and we're back to the characters again. And then you roll into what happens afterwards, which is that both have changed in the interim. Something has gone on. The fact that she dated another and he's now sitting in a coma. There's guilt on both ends because she's guilty that she's still enamored on this one angle while her beau or former beau is in a coma, and he's got the guilt that, damn, why didn't I have the nerve to actually date someone else during the time that she was gone? And the idea of a wake up from dream and swerve, how do you complete with a coma? How do you quantify that guilt? The fact remains, you've already moved past the transition point. You're no longer on the same path. It's like you last line you offer up. But often that old bastard time steals, and it's true. Well, once the notation to the drift has occurred, there's not a whole lot you can do about it.
All right. I will say, man, you touched upon, and having lived through this, and honestly, I did date during that time too. I mean, you're in high school, you know, but you hit on a lot of stuff, man. She had a lot of guilt. I had a lot of guilt. You know what I mean? But yeah, man, I appreciate everybody's comments. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Very welcome indeed. And you're welcome to pen for any future contests of ours and the late night poets in general. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And Pam, where are we off to next?
All right. Up next, we have Reality Poetry by S. Sharp, and we have a SoundCloud for that whenever you're ready, Neutron.
Reality Poetry. Hey, everyone. Be rich like me. Star on the reality show, My Poetry. Reality TV. Hey, that could be me. A survivor defecating in the bed of a bachelor. Oh my, Johnny Fairplay, that could be me. I could be a star on Kill Reality. Even if your name seems a contronym indeed. It's all about money and fame, baby. I could star on Next, but instead send me poets. I'll read their stuff. For every minute I read, they get a couple of bucks. But when I'm done and I've had enough, I'll just say, next, and they shall be cast into a pile of burning poetry books. Oh my! Or I could be on Skating with Celebrities. Wait, better yet, I'll start my own show, Poeming for Dictators, where contestants compete for the love of a tyrant. Pin me a poem, says Kim Jong-un. Write your last stanza, or at least it will be assumed. With each recitation in front of a firing squad. How about Who Wants to Marry a Poet? An offshoot of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? With the premise being, live life on a dare. No money involved, ever. Just a hope that someday you can make the perfect couplet.
That was excellent. I really enjoyed that SoundCloud. There's no way in my right mind that I ever would have thought that the intonation would have been so spot on for that read, Scott. So I just think it almost had a beat poetry vibe to it, and certainly did justice to the prompt. We've all been raised on television to believe that one day we'd all be millionaires and movie gods and rock stars, but we won't. And we're slowly learning that fact, and we are very, very pissed off from Fight Club. It was tongue-in-cheek, and you definitely got that vibe through the SoundCloud and the read in particular, and quite thought-provoking. And I love the use of popular culture references. So very well done. And Rex, what were your thoughts?
Bitingly sardonic. Extremely sarcastic, and it paints a thought of how people believe in the twatterings of that which they are presented. I mean, it paints such a smelly aroma of, hey, come on over to TikTok and see what's going on. I'm on there. Come pay for me. Yeah, please. I've had enough of that shit. It don't work. Reality is, everybody wants this, yet they're not willing to work for it. And unfortunately, if you don't work for it, you know what? You don't get it. And that's the reality that he's posing. Hey, you know what? You can wish upon a bloody star, but a star won't give you nothing.
Indeed. Well said, Rex. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
I really enjoyed the bite and the humor in this. I like how it takes a look at, as Rex said, social media, but also, you know, like, you know, at reality TV and, you know, how everybody just falls for it, and it's anything but reality. You know, and this is great all the way through, but, you know, or I really like, oh my, or I could be on Skating with Celebrities. Wait, better yet, I'll start my own show, Poeming for Dictators, where contestants compete for the love of a tyrant. Pen me a poem, said Kim Jong-un. Write your last stanza, or at least it will be assumed, with such recitation in front of a firing squad. Wonderful dark humor. Also, like the ending with the where he says, you know, like this the idea of a show, who wants to marry a poet? Just a hope that someday you can make the perfect couplet. Wonderful wordplay. A great look at how society eats up what the next reality show. They actually have they have some of the most boring reality shows out there. That it's just amazing to me. They've even become shows, but somebody's lapping them up. And so just an excellent write.
Great comment, Pam. You know what? There's actually one on Netflix at the moment. You're going to laugh at this one. How to make your own sex room.
I prefer to learn how to do that the old-fashioned way.
No,
you know,
no,
with the book through the mail, with the brown paper bag.
I have
and
to
on that note, Dan.
Because I have my pen and paper ready. Can you give me that channel number, please?
I'll wait.
I'll send you a DM directly. It's hysterical, actually.
I'm not copying the sound, too. I'll wait. No, I really like this, too. I mean, it's this is definitely in Chuck style, because the whole shallowness is a big central theme in a lot of what he writes. And I got a shell full. Who's the poet here? S. Sharp. You can see where he used reality TV as his medium to get the point across. But, I mean, he's touched on all of them, I think, here, almost. Survivor, the defecating in the bed. I think that would be a shout-out to Johnny Depp, maybe?
Yep.
And what a show that was. I mean, that became its own reality TV show, didn't it? And it's all like,
look
at this, flashing lights, glamour, glitter, you know, and everybody look at this, and everybody, but there's no substance, there's no meat to it, there's nothing. And when people start realizing that, they lose ratings, and then they just cancel it, and then they make a new show, which is exactly what he did here. So I really enjoyed this piece. I think he got right to the heart of the way society works a lot of times. And that's, mission accomplished.
Great comment there, Dan. I just have to say, you guys have been a hoot tonight, like an absolute hoot, and the comments have just been coming thick and fast. It's been brilliant. And on that note, Pam, where are we off to next?
Dogs on the Karmic March by Radio Bravo. And we have a SoundCloud for that.
Dogs on the Karmic March, a poem by Radio Bravo. That's me, by the way. Brittle limbs walking archock strides, crumbs trail wine behind star-crossed lines, staple ground shellac tarmac rhyme, floor prints etched fairy steps outlined. Chokers unleashed to leads and chains, leathery collars pull and maim. Drum snares beat on the canine lane, pack parades stripped of lupine vein. From barks to bites at feline pride, snarls to fights at sea line tides, paws and teeth filed down to nubs, electric shocks, cage voices and vice. Canine train heading molded plane, planet reigns, the court gripping strain, wolves roaming howl the jar contains, silenced whispers of hunger pains. Skies blinking, eyes pierce ash and cloud, sinking stoop bellies rinse and shroud, stout cords clutching caption loud, traps coronated cap on crown. Factories pray to sculpt in clay, plain faces to trace virgin day. Saddle and straddle, whipping sleigh, chattel from cattle left astray.
Great, SoundCloud. And Rex, I'll get you to start off first.
All right. Well, we can spend our lives letting the world tell us who we are.
sane or insane, saints or sex addicts, heroes or victims, letting history tell us how good or bad we are, letting our past decide our future, or we can decide for ourselves, and maybe that's our job to invent something better. I think you get hard into the sex addicts angle, and maybe a touch of insanity to roll with it, because the idea of dogs on the march, because he's got the chokers, leads and chains, bikes, barks, devices, feline pride. There's a notation between the feminine and the masculine aspect between cat and dog and the playground, so to speak. Because he hits on whips and saddle and straddle, whipping sleigh, chattel from cattle, left astray. I like that, but the sort of chattel from cattle, because it hits on the both of the same item. You being chattel as well as cattle. The idea of cattle, they're meant to be fed upon, and the chattel are the ones you use and abuse, but they end up being the same thing. So the brittle limp, walking hard, chalk stride kind of hits on that notion of a body's outline on the floor. Crumbs trail wine behind star-crossed lines, staple ground shellac tarmac rind, floor prints etched very steps outline. Again, that thought to what you do can outline yourself as a premier executor or one of those that has been executed. I like the thought with the canine lane, the lupine vein, again hitting into the notion of the bringing the wolf out of yourself. The saint's angle clearly doesn't walk in this. This is all about the sinning and the sex addict angle. And it doesn't, it doesn't hit on anything except to playing your own world march. The thought of that is who we are, that's who we're going to be, and nothing else need be said.
Excellent comment there, Rex. And Dan, what were your thoughts?
Actually, I kind of mirror a lot of what Rex said. I think that there is a sadomasochist feel to this. And again, that's pretty prevalent in Chuck's work, because a lot of it is how it's kind of like that Eurythmic song. Some of them, you know, some people like to be used and some people like to be abused. And I think there's a lot of that in here, but really what struck me more than anything is the flow of this and the word choices and the alliteration. Let me find one that just stuff I try to look for too. And he just did a really good job at the words he picked. From barks to bites at feline pride, snarls to fights at sea lion tides. Feline, and then the lion, the sea lion, together almost sounds like feline, or feline. if you see how close it is that I could even, you know, it's hard to go back and forth. But when it's written that way, it just flows, and it has that kind of that fluid, liquid feeling, and it kind of drips, if that makes sense. Another one that really got me, too, skies blinking eyes pierce ashen cloud, sinking stoop bellies rinse and shroud. It's just all over the place. Everywhere, almost every stanza I could pick out something like that. This Radio Bravo has a real way of wordplay. This is the kind of thing you see with a lot of I like listening to hip-hop, and this is the kind of thing you see with the hip-hop artists that can just rattle it off, you know what I mean? But in this, it doesn't rattle off. It just kind of flows. And I think he did a wonderful job.
I agree with you, Dan. It took me a while to figure it out as well, but it actually has an AAAB rhyming scheme to it as well. So not only has he done well with his word choice, the assonance and the alliteration, but the rhyming scheme is just superb. And I think it's one of the better rhyming poems I've seen in a while. You know, I was drawn to this part here. Chokers unleashed to leads and chains, leathery collars pull and maim, drum snare beat on the canine lane, pack parades stripped of lupine vein. So I think you're on point with your comment there, Dan and Rex. And I'll give final word to Pam.
Yeah, I really liked the rhyming in this, how he had the inner rhyme and the end rhyme. And to me, I don't know what it is. There's something about rhyme that often softens a poem. So to have a poem in rhyme and still have it have that really extremely sharp biting edge, I think works really well. And I really like this all the way through, but especially Canine Train, heading molded plane, planet rains, the core gripping strain. You just get the whole idea of humanity and the planet just falling apart. So powerful lines and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. And we've got 15 minutes left. Where are we off to next?
All right. Well, I'm going to see if we can get our two SoundClouds fit in those 15 minutes, which I believe we should be able to. And with that being said, we have up next, Iniquity's Folly by Mr. M, and we have a SoundCloud for that.
Excellent.
This is my recital of Iniquity's Folly, a poem inspired by Chuck Palahniuk. I like to think of myself as different, unique. I am sure many people assume this about themselves, yet if everyone is unique, are we not all similar? There are those that would feast on our insecurities, preying on our differences as a form of subtle coercion. Seems our division is calculated and meticulous. The ones that stand to gain bet on those that fall for anything. So we are set up to let down, tripping people before and after the finish line. Rather than give others a hand, we give them the finger. Everyone wants to stand out. No one wants to step up. Institutionalized jealousy is inbred with manufactured outrage, and the hate child of society's worst aspects gets the most views. Judgment trumps jovial every time. Mockery has become the new pastime. Desperately, people try to fit in, while simultaneously claiming individuality as a spirit animal. Too many chiefs humming potato to themselves. Amalgamation of failures peppered with minor achievements somehow leads to a sense of entitlement. I too have dusted the ledges of reason with feet of folly. Yet, I have come to realize that what I am is not mine alone. I have gotten this far with the help of others, even if hindrance was their intent. The benevolent have made me humble, and the malevolent have made me sharper and smarter. From the womb until my doom, I keep changing and evolving. Every hand that pats me on the back or robs food from my plate is a learning experience. So, no matter how rich or powerful you seem, no matter how much influence you have over others, just know that you are merely a byproduct of humanity and that you did not get there alone. We all hurt. We all bleed. We all thirst. We all hunger. Just as we all pay that final tax when death comes to collect.
Great, SoundCloud. And Pam, I'll get you to comment first. Are you on mute by chance? Oh,
I was on mute, and now I am not. No, I was just listening in awe, and wonderful read, wonderful SoundCloud. I love how this is dark, but it's the kind of dark that takes a look deep into the heart of society. So we are set up to let down, tripping people before and after the finish line. Judgment prompts jovial every time. Mockery has become the new pastime. There's really this whole idea of how we love to catch people on video messing up so we can point fingers and say, that's not me. But guess what? It is you. You know, as he says, you know, we all hurt, we all bleed, we all thirst, we all hunger. You know, that was a powerful line, and it's a strong look at the whole idea of how people are too far off and entertained by other people's humility and pain. So very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. Yeah, I was drawn to the same section there, and I think it rings true to both the prompt, which was, nothing of me is original. I am the combined effort of everyone I've ever known, and also real life, because we are an amalgam of one another, our life experiences, and friend or foe, you learn something. And I think I was drawn to this section here, from the womb until my doom, I keep changing and evolving. Every hand that pats me on the back or robs food from my plate is a learning experience. And I thought it was a very thought-provoking ride. And Dan, what were your thoughts?
I think you could almost pick any sentence or phrase in here, or, you know, completed phrase, and just spend a lot of time, because he is definitely a societal piece. And I do like how he ends it with something that is more like unifying, rather than just picking things apart and then leaving it that way. Because as a societal piece, it does take a village, you know, to raise a child. We are all, you know, inspired in a sense by people that are stealing food off our plates. I think, as he says, one place in here, every hand that pats me on the back or robs food from my plate is a learning experience. I could see that coming straight out of one of Chuck's books. There's a couple others that I could see coming out of his books. Rather than give others a hand, we give them the finger. That is so true. Everyone wants to stand out. No one wants to step up. I mean, again, I think I could pick almost any line, and we could just talk at least an hour on each subject. And he's not wrong as far as any of it that I see. You know what I mean? Definitely inspired by Chuck, and but I really like how he filtered it through the message that he brought through this piece. So no matter how rich or powerful you seem, no matter how influence you have on others, just know that you are merely a byproduct of humanity, and that you did not get there alone. Wow, you know? What else can I say?
I agree with you. It was a very profound ride. It really was. And Rex, I will give you final word, and then we'll move on to our final poem for the night.
Okay. Rob is outside the matrix, offering up a note of knowledge if you're willing to take that red pill. And it hits on a number of things. Seems how division is calculated and meticulous. Damn right. The ones that stand the game bet on those that fall for anything. Again, truth. Mockery has become the new pastime. Absolutely. Institutionalized jealousy is inbred with manufactured outrage. And the hate child of society's worst aspects gets the most views. And there's truth, a whole lot of truth to that. The idea of everybody thinks they can, as he hits on that note of everybody wants to stand out and not step up, there's that notion, oh, yeah, I can stand up to do this. But the unfortunate notation there is, yeah, you could do that, but who's going to fix your toilet when it breaks? Or you stuffed it with way too much shite that you're filling. Who's going to cook your meals? Who's going to provide the food that goes to the store that you so thoroughly enjoy when the shelves are now empty? You're setting yourself up for the obvious note that if you don't actually step outside the matrix, you don't live very long. And you're only feeding those who are keeping it alive.
Well, that was a good comment there, Rex.
I think you've all been great tonight. Can I say something
off what
Rex said? And it's brief. But you know how you hit on that line, everybody wants to stand out, no one wants to step up? You know, the funny thing is now, if you want to stand out, now you have to step up. That's what makes you stand out now. But anyway,
you're
that
right
was
on
it.
That.
It's just, it's kind of, what is that? I can't think of the right word. I just keep coming up with sarcastic. Too much Chuck.
It's kind of that note to strong men make for good society. Good society makes for weak men. Weak men make for strong men. It's a cycle that keeps revolving around. And when you've had life too good, you become morally decrepit.
Excellent. That's so well put, both of you, all of you, actually. And look, we're going to jump onto the last poem of the night, and then I'm going to run the show just a couple of minutes over so we get comments. Mark Lupi, SoundCloud? Yep. I'll just bring that up now.
Said the invisible man with face ripped off. I think I've got sex figured out. Though in some ways, I lack the facts. Namely, now please don't laugh. What philosophically it is. Why the theoretical bliss and why the pragmatic doubt anticlimax at the climax. More and more, I find they are just an after-the-fact side-flipping star. It's the expectation. It's the vague expanding sun after you are finally in and still don't know where to begin and don't know where to go, except you want to take it slow. You, bored bartender, you already know. That's what you always say as you wipe the bar away. Me, I know I'll never know, even at the thousandth time, even at the millionth rhyme. End of poem.
And Pam, would you like to comment first?
Yes, I'm glad Mark made a SoundCloud. Good to hear him. I like the twisted sense of humor in this. I like that he brings in the invisible man with face ripped off. I think I've got sex figured out. He'll have to explain it to all the rest of the men, but, you know, kudos for him. And
ouch.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed this one. It put a smile on my face. I love the dark humor. I love the questions. You bored bartender, you already know. That's what you always say as you wipe the bar away. It just, you know, feels like the whole idea, like of somebody just sitting there, you know, complaining to the bartender and, you know, discussing the barstool philosophers. That's what it makes me think of. So excellent write and very well done.
And Rex, what were your thoughts?
Well, let's see. The bite up front, it kind of hits on the note of your first time. It's the expectation. It's a vague expanding sun after you are finally in and still don't know where to begin and don't know where to go, except you want to take it slow. But that's not really where it goes, because the thought in that next line isn't coming from the bartender itself. It's kind of that offering up note as you look in the eyes of your partner. You bored, bartender? You already know. It ain't going good. That's what you always say as you wipe the bar away. It's that kind of note to, I'm already cleaning myself off. And, well, never mind. Maybe I'll get it after 1,000 times or 1,000,000 times. Maybe never.
Excellent comment, both Pam and Rex. And I'm going to give final word to Dan when you're ready.
I am sorry. I can't seem to find this one. I don't know what I did. I'm so sorry. I hate to comment on it without being able to read it. You know what I mean? And I did listen to it.
Yeah,
you know, if I'm listening to it and I'm trying to find it, I'm splitting my attention, and I don't think that's fair.
I completely understand.
But can you tell me, because I do feel bad, can you tell me the title and the author, and I will look it up. I can find it, I'm sure.
Yes, certainly. It's called I Think I've Got Sex Figured Out by Mark Lupi. And I'll make a quick comment. I just have to say that this was a great poem to finish on. And who would have thought in general for tonight's readings and the ones that we still will cover next fortnight, that good old Chuck Palahniuk would prompt such philosophical rites on maths for the show. I like the rhyming scheme and I enjoyed the take on sex and I'm in agreement with it wholeheartedly. And Pam, seriously, I had to put myself on mute because I was laughing for another minute after that. There is this sense that we will never learn. And are we connecting on a deeper level or are we going through the motions? And I think for each individual, it's different. I particularly like the climax, anti-climax commentary. Now, we have Pam and Rex's show coming up next, I believe, in half an hour, maybe just short of half an hour. And please tune in and keep an eye on allpoetry.com with the late night poets and all of the contests in links on the forum there. And thank you to Fill My Eyes, who is behind the scenes, making sure all the sound clouds are lined up. And a thank you to Felon, Pam, Rex, and Dan for calling in and making this show just an absolute joy. And on that note, I will say good night.
Oh, good night.
Good night.
Thank you for having us. Bye.
Bye.